This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So in central Harare this morning, it was like a ghost town. Central Harare is usually a hive of activity and just snarling traffic and exhaust and activity. And this morning, it was dead quiet.
That's VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Harare. We'll have the latest on Zimbabwe's elections and the aftermath coming up.
Also, the World Health Organization says experts, staff, and equipment have been sent to northeastern DRC to quick-start the process of combating a new outbreak of Ebola. And three Russian journalists have been killed in the Central African Republic.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Zimbabwean human rights activists today condemned soldiers' actions in post-election violence that killed at least three people in the capital. This as the nation's electoral commission promised delayed presidential poll results would be issued soon. Opposition Nelson Chamisa dug in his heels late today, just hours before the presidential announcement was due. He maintained that he had won. He said you can't rig an election or manipulate an election and then use that as a basis of engagement. He said that's deceitful. When asked what he would do if the results did not come out in his favor, he said we'll do a lot of things within the confines of legality and the Constitution. When asked if he had any contact with Mnangagwa, as the president indicated on Twitter, he denied it. There's no communication, he said. Our colleague Anita Powell, who has been in Harare covering developments, spoke with me about the mood in the city today.
So in central Harare this morning, it was like a ghost town. Central Harare is usually a hive of activity and just snarling traffic and exhaust and activity. And this morning, it was dead quiet. In front of opposition headquarters in downtown, there were army and police trucks parked. We heard that the soldiers were telling shopkeepers to close up and go home early. So that's the situation in central Harare. Last night, we learned that the government had invoked what is called the Public Order and Security Act. It's a rather controversial act that allows the police to call in the military to assist to keep order. So that's where we are in terms of the security situation in Harare this morning. There's a heavy police presence, and there's also a military presence on the street, which, of course, is unsettling and upsetting to many people who live in Harare.
Also, Anita, now human rights organizations are calling for an investigation into the killing yesterday of three protesters there in Harare.
This morning, I spoke to several human rights activists, prominent Zimbabwean human rights activists, who condemned the soldiers' actions yesterday, in which we now know that at least three people were shot dead. They condemned their actions as outrageous and unjustifiable. They said that the police had the situation in hand when some 150 protesters came to election headquarters to protest, and they did not see why the military needed to be called in, that it was on the shoulders of the government of Zimbabwe to restore order in a more responsible way, and they called for an investigation. Also this morning, President Emmerson Mnangagwa issued a series of tweets in which he sounded a little bit more conciliatory than he had last night. Last night, he blamed the violence on his opponent, presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa. As you recall, Chamisa claims that he won Monday's poll, although the big issue is that presidential results are not out yet, 3 days after the poll. This morning, Mnangagwa says we've been in communication with Chamisa to discuss how to defeat the situation. It's important that we are united. And he also is calling for an independent investigation into what happened in Harare. He's trying, I guess, to put out a message of authority and calm.
What is the expectation today regarding the Electoral Commission releasing the results of the presidential poll?
We just heard from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission around noon that they would tell us at 5 when they would release the presidential results. The upshot of that is we don't know when we might get the presidential results. We might get them this evening. We might get them tomorrow. The Election Commission spokesman who spoke, he said that, you know, legally, the commission has 5 days to release results, as this maybe indicates that they might go on the long side. They might take up to 5 days. Their deadline for that is August 4th. So we may not know tonight. We may not know tomorrow.
Have there been any new developments regarding Chamisa's claims that he won the election?
I spoke to Chamisa's spokesman last night, and he's taken to calling him President Chamisa. They believe very firmly that they won the vote. They believe that their observers at polling stations around the country documented what is a clear victory for the MDC alliance. So he's standing firm in his assertions that he won the poll. What's also interesting is the MDC has called into question counting processes. For example, there were results that came in from rural areas before results came in from central Harare, which is a heavily urbanized area. They're asking why. Why would the countryside be reporting sooner than the city? So those are some interesting questions that they're asking. A lot of the delay and a lot of the controversy centers around what I believe is called the Z11 form. It's a form posted outside of individual polling stations that has to be signed off on by all local election observers. And so the Election Commission is saying that they just haven't collated all of those forms because they cannot consider results legitimate and completed until all of the party observers sign off. And what they're saying is that not everybody has signed off. There's almost certainly an interesting and complicated backstory there, and maybe we'll find out in coming days.
That was VOA correspondent Anita Powell speaking with me from Harare.
The violence that wrecked Zimbabwe yesterday came after a relatively quiet campaign and voting, fostering hope that the country was entering a new age after longtime President Robert Mugabe was pressured into resigning. But after security forces opened fire, killing at least three people in Harare yesterday, there are questions about Zimbabwe's future and how it can break the cycle of unrest and repression that has plagued it for so long. Dorina Biko of the African Center for Strategic Studies talked with my colleague Paul Alexander about the challenges that the country faces in easing the concerns of the shocked populace and the international community.
It certainly means that violent political transitions are not a thing of the past. And so there has to be a lot of work on that end, whether institutional reforms. It also has to involve some kind of, you know, sanction for using violence. I mean, that's one reason why political violence continues, is that, you know, people get away with it. So, you know, that's one of the other key things, along with the economy and the other long list of things that have to be done for Zimbabwe, is to, you know, address, you know, the persistence of violent political transitions. It also requires looking into institutional transparency and accountability. You know, one of the reasons, I think, why the opposition felt that it could go onto the streets, or felt that it needed to go onto the streets, was because all along they've been claiming that the Electoral Commission in particular has not been transparent with the voter registry, with where the ballots have been are being printed or were printed, with the counting. The Electoral Commission was relying on kind of a more legalistic explanation as to why it didn't need to be so accommodating, but for purposes of building credibility and building rapport, sometimes you have to go above and beyond, and that's part of sort of institutional reform. Certainly, how the police interact with citizens is key as well in terms of the reform agenda. People should be able to demonstrate without also, you know, fearing their lives.
How does this country break the cycle, which now seems more entrenched than ever?
You know, that's the difficult work, and it's a slow process as well. I mean, one is addressing, you know, the whole concept of the relationship that the police and the other security services have with the community. What is their role? How do they interact with the public? It's not new as a concept, and so there are ways to do that. Some of the countries in West Africa that had a very tense relationship with their publics have tried hard, you know, to overcome that fear, where you have a less adversarial role with the public. That might mean calling for investigations into human rights abuses and other types of sort of accountability. So it's a building block process where you get to a point where you restore, you know, credibility with the public. It also calls for some level of political inclusivity, not necessarily a government of national unity. How does a ruling party, whichever party that is, reach out to the other members of the political spectrum going forward? You know, that's a recognition of, you know, the level of political marginalization. We're not probably at a stage where we, you know, it can be politics as usual. And while there is always a level of contention in politics, it doesn't always have to manifest violently. I just saw this morning that Mnangagwa had reached out to Nelson Chamisa. You know, I thought that was positive to reach out and try to seek an end to some of the violence.
That was Doreen Abiko of the African Center for Strategic Studies talking with VOA's Paul Alexander.
Also, for the first time since the military-assisted transition last November, soldiers have been deployed into the streets of Harare to control protesting citizens. Live ammunition killed at least three unarmed citizens. Reporter Kuzai Svenavashi looks at the incident and what it could mean for the country's efforts to democratize.
Helicopters hovered over Harare. Tear gas filled the air, and live ammunition was fired at protesting civilians. The demonstrators were calling on the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, also known as ZEC, to announce the presidential results. They argued the commission was delaying the announcement so the government could steal the vote and defeat opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. Daniel Chigudu is a journalist who was hurt while covering Wednesday's protest.
It was very tense. You know, it was more like we were in a war situation. It was scary. You know, gunshots. We've never had a situation in Zimbabwe where the army is deployed against the people.
Yesterday's events leaves many wondering if Zimbabwe has really changed. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of the news site Open Pali.
Nothing has changed except the realization that nothing has changed. Robert Mugabe may have been gone, but the system that supported Robert Mugabe's rule for 38 years is still much intact, and you can see that with what happened yesterday.
Zimbabweans are still waiting for the results from its July 30th polls, which critics say, if properly held, would chart a new path for the country. The results are set to be announced later tonight. Doug Coltart is a human rights activist and a lawyer who says the government of Mnangagwa is facing a dilemma.
There's something that they want more than legitimacy, and that's power. And so if it becomes a question of either legitimacy or power, ZANU PF will always use power. So I think after the election, all of a sudden it seemed like that their grip on power may be slipping away. And we still don't know what has happened in the presidential elections.
He adds that the freedom people spoke of following the end of the rule of Robert Mugabe was superficial.
We had a moment where there were some cosmetic changes. But the reason that you can see that there was never any intention of real change is because, for instance, they never repealed the repressive legislation which had been used in the Mugabe era.
Coltart says this leaves the government with the ability to turn on and off the freedoms of the people like a switch. Economist and former parliamentarian Eddie Cross says yesterday's events derails the country's long-term plans to rejoin the family of nations and improve the country. He is, however, hopeful that if the situation is properly managed, the situation may be salvaged. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
If the World Health Organization says expert staff and equipment have been sent to northeastern DRC to quick-start the process of combating a new outbreak of Ebola. The last outbreak of this fatal virus in Congo was declared over just a week ago. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Ebola is a constant threat in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as the virus thrives in heavily forested areas. This latest outbreak is the 10th since the first one was discovered in 1976. The World Health Organization says this new outbreak in North Kivu province is 2,500 kilometers away from Ecuador province, the site of the previous outbreak, and there is no link between the two. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the DRC Ministry of Health informed WHO Wednesday that 4 of 6 samples taken in North Kivu tested positive for Ebola virus. He says it is crucial to gain access to the area as quickly as possible. He says having people and material in the country from the outbreak in Ecuador is very helpful in tackling the outbreak.
So we really need to get into the area to do epidemiological investigation, try to find cases, try to work with health workers to strengthen infection prevention and control measures, and also to start with the contact tracing. It is, on the other hand, very worrying that this area is a conflict zone. It is an area with lots of displacement, so the access can be hampered in that way.
The virus was discovered in a village near the city of Beni in North Kivu, which hosts more than 1 million displaced people. The province shares borders with Rwanda and Uganda, with a lot of cross-border movement due to brisk trade. Jazarevich says WHO will work with these neighboring countries to try to prevent the virus from crossing over. He says identifying the type of Ebola virus that is circulating is a priority, as that will tell scientists whether the vaccine used to help contain the outbreak in Ecuador province can also be used in North Kivu. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib. 21 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. After security forces opened fire and killed at least 3 people in Harare yesterday, there are now questions about the country's future as it tries to embark on the path of democracy. And the World Health Organization says expert staff and equipment have been sent to Northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo to quickstart the process of combating a new outbreak of Ebola. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Three Russian journalists have been killed in the Central African Republic. They were investigating Russian government interest in diamond, gold, and uranium mining and the involvement of Kremlin-linked mercenaries from a consultancy called the Wagner Group. The firm has been active in Syria, eastern Ukraine, and Sudan. In the Central African Republic, the group has been training local forces. An editor with a journalist employer, the Russia-based Investigations Management Center, says the three men were on their way at night to Bambari, about 400 kilometers from the capital, Bangui. A roadblock by security forces warned the men against traveling to the rebel-controlled north, but they decided to go ahead. Their driver says armed men later emerged from the bush and opened fire. Officials say the attack could have been financially motivated, but others are urging an investigation into the incident, saying it was unusual for the attackers to leave the driver alive and not cover their tracks.
French President Emmanuel Macron recently directed his foreign minister to hold meetings with the main political rivals in Libya. He instructed the minister to ensure all parties are taking steps to hold elections before the end of the year. President Trump has praised Italy's efforts to stabilize Libya, but Paris and Rome have different stances on the North African country and have relations with different political actors there. Experts say such international divisions affect any potential political settlement in Libya. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of Libya Analysis, explained to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi the reasons behind derailed efforts to stabilize Libya.
The main motivation of these French visits recently to Libya are likely to try and re-energise the Paris summit agreement and to try and get some momentum towards the election process. However, it's unlikely that these particular visits in and of themselves will have much impact on the process. Without a clear implementable framework that allows a sort of technical, legislative and security steps that are needed in order for elections to take place, it's difficult to see how, you know, one set of meetings is going to change that. And really, the key person that the French or any other actor need to be engaging with at the moment is the House of Representatives Speaker, Aguila Saleh. As at the moment, it's the HOR where there's kind of a bottleneck on this process. For elections to take place, the legislation needs to be passed, and it's the HOR that needs to do that. So really, at this moment, it's Aguila Saleh who is the person who needs to be influenced.
But Libyan rivals agreed in theory to the big principles of holding elections. So what is missing, in your opinion, to achieve this goal?
I think that the problem with the push for elections and the rush ahead for elections by the end of the year is that this is kind of seen as a quick win, this idea that elections will solve everything and will solve all of Libya's problems. And that just simply isn't the case. Elections are only one small part of any sort of democratic transition or process. What needs to happen first is real open discussions on reforming some of Libya's political and particularly economic institutions. You know, the distribution of resources, the, you know, endemic corruption that's in Libya, and other issues related to the economy. This is what's driving most of the conflict between different militias, driving the tension between different parts of the country. So there really needs to be some sort of move towards a solution, some sort of new social contract in place before elections happen. If you have elections rushed through without any kind of structural reform, essentially you're just electing new people to run the same broken system, and therefore the same problems are going to survive.
President Donald Trump praised the Italian efforts to stabilize Libya, but France and Italy have different stances on Libya and have relations with different political rivals in Libya. How does such international division affect any potential political settlement in Libya?
Well, I think international division is actually one of the biggest obstacles to any kind of political reconciliation or deal in Libya. As you've mentioned, France and Italy are close to different, you know, rival factions in Libya. And the reality is that if you've got different parallel approaches, so Italy's talking about having its own Libya initiative, you know, along with the French initiative, which is already running. If you've got two different forums, what this does, it encourages Libyans to be able to seek advantage with different partners if they look to try and get one piece of legislation passed, or they look for arms and one of the international players doesn't allow it, they can just go to a different person. And so I think really it makes the likelihood of peace much less, and it really increases the divisions and the rivalries in Libya, and it makes compromise, or forcing Libyans to compromise to find a solution, much more difficult to achieve.
So against that backdrop, is it still feasible to start efforts to stabilize Libya before the end of this year?
It's going to be very difficult to hold elections before the end of this year. The House of Representatives held two sessions at the start of this week where they were meant to vote on some legislation to have a referendum on the constitution, which would provide the basis for the elections. The vote didn't happen, that's been postponed, and it's likely to be continued to be postponed. And ultimately, without any kind of legislation which dictates, you know, what elections will be, whether they be parliamentary, presidential, what powers will those who are elected hold, then it's very difficult to see how elections could be held by the end of the year.
That was Rhiannon Smith, the managing editor of Libyan Analysis. She was speaking with reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Xiaogun Cheng, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is our moment. Together with footballers like Steven Pienaar, we are speaking out to end malaria.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Let's do it.
United, we can beat malaria.